Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Bava Basra Yotes. We are holding on the second line off the top. V'loi nivreches ha-klevsin v'chula, the Mishnah says that a laundry pit, so they used to have this pit in the ground into which they used to place their soiled garments, and it would soak for a while, and then they would move it over to another pit where they would sort of agitate it and ultimately clean up the garments. Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, Amar Rabba Bar Avoh, in the name of Rabba Bar Avoh, Lo Yishana, when does the Mishnah say that this type of pit needs to be kept away from your neighbor's property, from his bar, so that it doesn't cause any damage? When do we say that three tefach gap is enough? Elimin amachatzin. That's only with respect to that first pit. Rashi explains, first they used to soak it for a couple of days in dog waste, which would, loosen up the dirt on the, have an acidic effect on the clothing and loosen up any stains. So that was the first stage. That was sort of the soaking stage. And then they used to move it over to something called Nadion, which was another a pit, which was just a clean water pit. So that was used for agitation. They used to rub it in there, and that was the next phase in cleaning up the clothing. So Leishon Elamin HaMachamtzim, when do we say a three tefach setback is enough? That's only with respect to that first pit. Aval Mina Nadion Dalad Amis. But from the second pit, there the water will spray and sprinkle all over the place as you're rubbing and agitating. You need four amos harachaka between yourself and your neighbor. Tani nami hach, we find that same in a braisa. The brechas akayv sin dalad amos. The braisa says that four amos is required by a laundry pit. Va'anan tenan gimel tefachim, hold it. What the Mishnah says, three tefach is enough. Ela lav shema menokad Rav Nachman. This proves Rav Nachman's point. It depends what you're speaking about. This pit is... For this pit, three tefach is enough, and for the other one, four amos is required. Others had another version of this discussion, that actually it started with a kasha, and Rav Nachman came to answer the kasha by way of making that distinction between different types of holes. Tanan, we have an our Mishnah, Nivrechas HaKoyfsin, Gimel Tefachim, and three tefach setback is enough for the Nivrechas HaKoyfsin, V'atani Arba Amos, but we have another braisa which seems to present a different shear of four amos. On that, we have Omar of Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua. So it wasn't stated as a standalone statement, rather in response to an apparent contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Like Hashi, the answer is Kan min amachamtzin, Kan min hanadion. Depends which pit. One requires three, one requires four amos. Rav Chia Brei de Rav Avya, Masn lo behedya. He had a totally different. Braisa, clear Braisa, where we find this distinction. Elam ken hirchek misfas machamtzon lekoisel gimot tefachim. The Braisa clearly says that the harchak of gimot tefachim is sufficient only by the machmetzon. By the way, it's called machmetzon because it's like chometz, like vinegar, like it becomes affected by the acid content of that material. So in any case, the Braisa clearly says that the Archaka of Gimel Tefachim is only Sfat Machmetzam L'Koysel. Then you have Gimel Tefachim. Apparently, if it's the second phase, the rubbing phase, the agitation phase, which creates a sprinkling effect all around you, for the air, for that type of situation, four amos is required. V'sod Besid. So Mishnah says, you have to keep away, and V'sod Besid, add a layer of lime. You have to seal, right, waterproof your pit or whatever. The question is like this: V'sad b'sid tinan, oidom oy sad b'sid tinan. How do you read it? Is it in addition v'sad b'sid, in addition to keeping away three tefachim or whatever, you have to add sid for added protection, or perhaps the vav is an either or type of connotation? Either this or that. You have two options: either harachak, either actual distancing, or sealing is enough. Protection is enough. Pshita says the Gemara, it's obvious that the visad besit tinan, that it's In addition to keeping a distance, why? Because if we'll suggest that it's either or, so then take a look at the next part of the Mishnah, where we have other types of halachas of distancing your materials, right? We have gefes, zevel, melach, all these hazardous materials that can harm an existing structure. So you got to keep it away from your neighbor's structure. And the Mishnah says either over there you have a choice. You have two options: either a 3 tefach setback or add a coat, a protective coat on the neighbor's wall, subbasid. So now, in the first bunch of situations in the Mishnah, the boyer and all that, right, in that first set of the Mishnah, if, in fact, it's either or, the Mishnah is providing two options, either keep away or add a protective layer of sid, so why didn't the Mishnah simply package them all together as one list of cases? Why differentiate between this set of cases and that set of cases? Pshita the Vesad B'Sid Tzinan, the Isak Adaitach, because if we'll say the Isad B'Sid Tzinan, that in the Reisha, in the first section of the Mishnah, it's either or, Imkain, it says exactly like the next part of the Mishnah, Imkain Lirabinu, listen and Ninu. The Mishnah should simply pair them all together. In all these situations, you have two options to protect your neighbor's property, either distancing or a protective layer of Sid. So as the Gemara, well, Dilma Misham Dalei Dami, perhaps the reason why the Mishnah chose to list them separately, perhaps the same exact requirements apply to both, but the reason why we separated them, Dilma Misham Dalei Dami, Hayezek, Hayezek, the reason is because the effects are different. Each set of cases presents a different set of concerns. Reisha, in the first set of cases, is Zeka de Metuno, but there it's a concern about exuding moisture on your neighbor's property. Seifa, Zeka de Avla, whereas in the second set of cases, it's a question of Havla, fumes, etc. So it's a totally different concern, therefore it's important to differentiate it. Toshma, here comes another Raya to try to prove our point. Again, is it a question of both requirements, distancing and protective layers, or is it one or the other? Tashma Rabido Aimer, Sela Habab Yadayim. If you have this soft, crumbly soil, Zechayfer Bayer Mikan, you can dig on your side of the fence, of the boundary, and he can dig on his side of the property line. Zemarchik Gimotvachem Visad Basid, and either party must set back 3 tefach plus add Sid as a protective measure. There you go. Both requirements are applied. So, the Gemara Taima the Babi Adai. That's only because it's soft soil. So the added measure of protection is required. But apparently, if it's just a firm type of soil, which doesn't carry this extra concern, there both requirements are not applied. It's one or the other. So the Gemara. Perhaps, even if it was just plain, standard material, not soft, not crumbly, nami sad besit, perhaps you would have to have both protective measures applied. So why does Rabbi Yudim focus on babi adayim? To let us know an added point. Perhaps I would say, given the babi adayim, since it's soft and collapsible material, 3 tefach is not enough. You have to keep it further from the property line. Kamash won the point is no, 3 tefach is enough. So we thought we had a raya to our question of whether in the first set of cases in the mission we need gimel tefachim plus sad basid or is it either one? We tried to prove it, we haven't really concluded. Marchikin as a gefes, as a zevel, as a melech, as a slime. So in the second section of the mission we have a list of materials that can exude radiation, have an acidic effect on the structure nearby, fumes, all types of detrimental effects. Okay, Tzinan Hasan. Now we have a similar Mishnah with a list of these types of materials in Maseches Shabbos when it comes to insulating a pot. So the halacha is that when one wants to preserve the heat on a cooked material, he can do so on Erev Shabbos, provided he's using materials which are not moisiv hevel, which don't add, don't increase fumes, heat, etc., because then a person might not differentiate between those materials and actual coals, which of course cannot be used on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says like this, Tanan Hasan, Bamei Toimin, what materials are legally used for insulation? Or Bamei Toimin, what materials may a person not use for Shabbos? Because of their hevel content, they have this ability to radiate fumes and increase heat. So we have like this, a very similar list to our Mishnah, which is also involved in this type of listing. Ein Toimin Loi Begefes, one may not use olive skin waste after the pressing. They have the skins which eventually they heat and they get heated up and they get right. For like zevel, animal waste, for like melach, salt, like sid, lime, like choel, sand, bein lachem, bein yevashim, whether these things are moist or dry. So it's a comparable list to our Mishnah, but with one difference. Ma'ishna hocha d'ktani slime. So why is it that by us in Perikla Yachbar and Baba Bashra, while listing items which have similar tendencies, we include slime, these fire-generating stones. And we omit sand. But over there in Shabbos, it's the other way around. We mention sand, slime, and not stones. Well, don't learn too much into it. The reason why in Shabbos we omit slime, because people typically don't use rocks to insulate pots. I'm only a bayit. So if we're working with only things that are commonly used, why does the Mishnah mention wool shearings, combed sections of purple wool? That's not commonly used. The Mishnah says you can use all these types of materials, wool shearings and combed wool, and combed purple wool, and muchen is worn out wool material. But they cannot be moved on Shabbos because of muktzah concerns. But bottom line, we do make reference to uncommonly used materials. Elam Rabbi says, Abaye, well, the Yagadol of Rei, regarding your question, why we omitted an item here and an item there, well, is a pasuk in Iyoy, Yagadol of Rei, let his friend reveal on him. Basically what he's saying is that, yeah, there's no difference between the lists. We just meant to mash them up and fill in the blanks. Tana hacha slayim. So over here in Baba Basra, we do include slayim. And the truth is we should include a sand as well, like we find in Maseches Shabbos. Tana hasam chayil. But there we mention chayil. And of course, we should add slayim as well. Really, there's no discrepancy between the Mishnahs. It so happens to be that we should just we're just meant to compare the two lists and fill in the blanks. If you want to employ this type of a formula, that since the list does contain many, many elements of the other list, that allows us to simply fill in the blanks, so then why even bother going through all the items on the list? Just mention all items in one area, in one context, either in Baba Basra or in Shabbos, and that's enough. And in the other sugya, just mention one item, which will indicate, well, we want to bring them all, import all the other items as well. What then the idach won't understand to import the other items as well. We don't do that. Rather, we have a pretty comprehensive list, except for one item. Elam Rava says, Rava, I'll tell you why. The Mishnayi specifically omit slime over there in Shabbos by Hatmana and Chayil over here in Baba Basra. You know why slime aren't mentioned above in Shabbos? Because it scrapes. Some say it means it rusts. It brings rust to the pot. Basically, nobody wants to use. Nobody uses stones for insulation, so it's not really practical. It's not. There's no purpose in mentioning it. You know why? In Baba Basra, when we speak about distancing yourself and archakas and zakan, we don't mention the choil material because it's not applicable. Because sand has an interesting type of character. If it comes into contact with heat, if it absorbs heat, it exudes heat. It's sort of like a conductor, right? And if it absorbs cold, it exudes cold. So basically, there's no reason to be concerned about sand per se. You can place sand near your neighbor's wall, right? Presumably it's cool, it's cold, it's not going to affect it, right? Because from something hot, it heats up, and from something cold, like a wall, cover, it cools off. Says the Gemara about Tani, Rabbi Yeshua Choyl, but Rabbi Yeshua in his Braisa, in the Tosefta, does include sand material as well when it comes to Baba Basra. Says the Gemara Hosam and Matuna, there we're speaking about moist sand, which is detrimental to the structure. Well, Tani de Danami, listening, so why doesn't our Tana of Al-Mishnah include sand? But look, Matuna will understand that we're speaking about moist sand, which is a concern. Well, Tana le Amas HaMayim, there's no reason to discuss moisture generating materials because we already discussed this irrigation dish, this canal, which is a water concern. So why repeat with another water concern? But what do you mean? The Mishnah does mention Amas HaMayim, which is a moisture water concern, uktani nevrachas akleisin, and in addition to that, the Mishnah does mention the laundry pit, which of course is a moisture concern. So we see that we duplicate similar concerns. Well, each one there has a special lesson. Hanu tzrichi, both are needed. The itan amas hamayim. If we only mention the amas hamayim, which is a set established permanent type of irrigation ditch, mishum dekviya. So this water supply canal is something which is set in permanent place. Of course, it presents an ongoing, constant concern and can be detrimental to the structures nearby. Aval nevrechas akleishim lekviya, but when it comes to this laundry pit, which apparently isn't a permanent phenomenon, so perhaps it doesn't have such a detrimental effect on the area. Anyway, perhaps there's no concern. That's why the Mishnah mentions it as well. On the other hand, if you taught nevrechas akleishim, had the Mishnah only mentioned the laundry pit, I would say, well, there's an added concern there, mishum dehal kavu v'kaimi, because it's set in one place. It's not moving. Still, stationary waters can sometimes be more detrimental than flowing waters because they sit in one place and they trickle slowly into the depths of the soil below, which can undermine your friend's foundation. But a flow-through canal. So since it's a flowing channel, so perhaps over there, the water is just zooming by and not really getting deeply absorbed into the ground below. Perhaps there's no concern. That's why the Mishnah seeks to mention both. Both are a concern, but when it comes to mentioning sand, which is just another sort of subset of a moisture concern, there's no point. The Mishnah did not seek to mention that. Marchikinas hazroim v'samach reisha, so you meant to keep away the zroim, plants, your plow, from your neighbor. Asks the Gemara, zroim, typically mishamach reisha. Why even mention plants? Apparently, you have to plow it before you plant. So there you go. You're not meant to plow nearby. So once you can't get through the plowing process, how are you going to plant? Why have you mentioned planting? Because this fellow didn't use a plow. He dug by hand. So plowing wasn't a concern. And Mishnah has to add that despite that there was no harisha concern, but Zroim on their own. Right? The plants on their own can dig down, undermine the neighbor's foundation. Asks the Gemara Machresha, let's go the other way. Why even mention the plow? But typically, Mishum Zroim. If Zroim is a concern, so then you're never going to get to plant anything. So why even mention that plow is a concern? Becharish Leilonis. Oh, speaking of that, he's not planning on planting anything. He has pre-existing trees, and he's just going to plow around the trees. And that's a concern on its own. But typically, Mishum Maya, okay, but he has to water his plants. Water is, right? So why even mention all these things? If you're never going to get to grow proper plants there, right, without watering. So, why bother making reference to keeping these rhyme away if the water is a concern on its own, which we already know from the beginning of the Mishnah. It says the Tana Beretz Yisrael, Koi Awa Mishnah is referring to Eretz Yisrael, that's where he lived, the Chsiv, Limitar Shemaim Tishnamayim, over there, we don't need to manually water. Rather, it suffices by way of rainwater, so there will be no water concern, because he's not adding water. And therefore, the Mishnah has to let us know that the Zrayim on their own have the ability to harm the structure. L'meimah the Zrayim, it's done called Mishtarshi. So do you mean to say that Zrayim, that these plants will exude roots which grow sideways, and therefore they may undermine the neighboring structure rather than growing straight down? But no, we have a Mishnah Maseches Kelayim. We're not meant to mix. We're not meant to plant zroim, right? Plants, vegetables, in close proximity to a vine, right? That would be kilei hakerem. But let's say, v'tanan hamavrich as a geffen. Let's say he took a branch off the vine and he bent it into the ground. They used to do that. They used to sort of run it through the ground and bring it out elsewhere. And eventually it would grow into its own, develop into its own vine. So what happens to that underground, that section where the vine branch is embedded underground? What happens to that section? Could you plant on that? Or is it considered like planting kalayim? Hamavrach is a geffen baretz. Imein al gaba afar shlesh ha-tfachim. Unless there's three tefach of earth above that underground branch, right, which is sufficient distance to allow planting other plantations on top. Lo yob is erala, but with less than that, it's considered drawing nutrients from the same place as the branch. You can't plant other plants over it. But we have a brisa which explains. This concern is only if it's directly over the branch, over the embedded underground branch. You could plant on either side of that underground branch. Oh, okay, apparently you see that these roots will not spread sideways. So, back to our story, why can't you plant Zrayim right next to your neighbor's wall if the Zrayim are only growing downwards and not sideways? Amar Rabbi Chaga, Mishem Rabbi Yesi, Mishem Achlidas Akarki, right. The roots grow downward, but still they crumble up, they soften up, they Achlidin, some say means like a hole, they crumble, they make the hole, they dig through, they bore through the ground next to that structure, and they kick up, they generate soft and crumbly material, which can undermine his foundation. Okay, so in conclusion, one must keep the Zroim, the Machresha, water, from the neighboring structure. Likewise, Miraglaim of a person has to be kept away, three tefach from the neighboring wall. Amar Rabba, Bar Bar Chama, Mutar La'adam La'ashtem Mayim, one is allowed to relieve his water near a neighboring wall. This was a foretelling of the misfortunes which will befall the Rosh Ha'achav. I will eliminate the members of his household that are mashtin bekir, that engage and relieve themselves alongside the walls. And the Ramash, the son of the Rashash, learns that the fact that the Pasuk uses the word be Israel in this context would indicate to us that in fact it's acceptable behavior. So that's a riot to Rabbi Bar Chana that it's allowed. Asks the Gemara, what do you mean? But the Mishnah by us seems to say otherwise. Varan Tanan, you have to keep this material, this acidic material, away from a structure. The Mishnah speaking where a person is pouring the whole vat, a large quantity of this material alongside the wall, that's a problem, but just a small amount is okay. Let's just skip the brackets. Tashma. L'yashtin odem mayim b'tzad koysa shechai veiru. Elem kein hirchek mimenu. Gimel tefachim. So here it's a clear halacha that a person may not personally relieve himself unless he was marchik. Gimel tefachim. When is this a concern? Because of Levena, when it's these brick wall, which Rashi says can, you know, this lime, this cement, whatever gets dissolved with this material. Aval, because of Levena, but if it's a stone wall, which is more durable, there, as long as you take precaution not to harm it, that's okay. V'kama, how far away do you have to be? By a stone wall, tefach is enough. V'shol tzum mutter. And if the stone wall is built over a hard rock, so it has a very strong, solid foundation, mutter, so there, totally mutter, there's no concern. You don't even have to. V'marchagei tefach. So clearly we see that against a kaisa levenim, or even a kaisa lavanim, typically harchake is required, that's a stira. To yufta, that's a refutation. The Rabba Barbrachana who said it's permissible. To yufta. Asks the Gemara, v'harabba Barbrachana, didn't he bring a pasuk by Achav to prove his point? Kroka amar. Answers the Gemara, it's not referring to a person. Hasam. Hachik amar, the pasuk simply meant, afilu midi, the darker the shtuni bekir, even this creature which regularly does relieve himself against the walls, lo yishevikinle, I will not leave over to Achav. Who's that? Not a person. My new, actually, it's a cow, but it's a dog. But a person may not engage in this type of activity, lest he harm his neighbor's structure. Says the Gemara. Now we move over to a sugya of Tumas Meis. Omar of Tuvei Bar Kis, Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel tells us like this. Rikik, a thin, like a pita or a thin, like a wrap, some sort of, thin type of bread. Einoi Memait Bechaloin. So we have, let's say, two rooms. And there's a dead person in one. A mace, which exudes Tuma, right? The tumor will now spread next door as well if there's an opening in the wall, a chaloin, a little window, as long as it's a tefach by a tefach. So the tumor will spread from one room to the other. Unless he blocks up the wall, unless he plugs up the wall. A rakik, ain't a mite b'chaloin. If he places his rakik to plug up that hole, it doesn't diminish its size, it doesn't diminish its effect. Why? Because ultimately he's going to take it away. He's going to use it to eat it. It's edible. Why would he leave it there forever? So it doesn't really become bottle. It doesn't become part of the structure. And doesn't really block the tumah. Asks the Gemara, Mayuri Rakik, why single out this thin, delicate piece of bread? I feel avanami. Even if it's a solid loaf of bread, it's edible, it's not bottle, it doesn't protect. Loimi boy ka'amar, you're right. It goes without saying. Loimi boy ka'amar. Of course, if it's a thick, heavy piece of bread, given the ichsele, since it's still edible, loimi batale, presumably, he doesn't nullify, he doesn't make it part of the structure, and therefore it cannot be really incorporated into the wall, it can't nullify the opening. I will rekick the mimis, but rekick, which soft and susceptible to moisture and all that, so perhaps it becomes mos, unfit for use. So perhaps since it got moistened by the wall and it became mos, so he just forgets it, leaves it there for all time. Kamashma on the point is no, since ultimately it's edible, we can't see it as part of the structure. Asks the Gemara, okay, let's say he would clearly indicate I'm mevatel to the wall. It sounds like it would work, but it can't. The tapik lay, forget about whether he's intending on leaving it there or not. It goes without saying that it can't do the job because this material is edible, right? And it's mekabel tumah, it's susceptible to tumah. Malacha is. When you're susceptible to tumah, you can't protect others from tumah. You can't repel tumah if you yourself are vulnerable to tumah. Can't repel tumah. Speaking that it was mixed with, it was kneaded with fruit juice, so never really had the ability to be mekabel tumah, which only happens when something becomes hukshar, becomes exposed to the seven, classic liquids, one of which is water. But fruit juice does not open up the tumah door. So this is a fruit juice type of bread, and therefore it's not susceptible to tumah. So technically it could be chaytetz if he would have been mevatlet, but Shmuel tells us that the assumption is he wasn't mevatlet. Meisvi, it comes a kasha on Shmuel, who seems to say that anything useful or edible doesn't become part of the structure. Kupa malia tevin, v'chavis malia gregers. Similar case, he has a box full of hay, a barrel full of figs, ha'monochem b'chon lein, placed in this chalein. Does it block the tumah or not? Right, we take a close look. Kol she'ilinot, if theoretically you would remove the containers, what would happen to the content? Would it stand on its own? V'chaylin tevin ugrigoris lamed b'fnei atzman, and the materials within that would just stand on their own. Choytetzin, so then they can repel the tumah. V'im la, but otherwise, ein choytetzin, you can't repel the tumah. Rashi says because the containers, the chavis and the kupa, are mekabel tumah and they cannot be choytetz. So we have to sort of ignore the container and focus on the content. But what good is the content if the content itself is edible, is useful, is not going to be bottled to the wall? Vatev and chazal behemti, hay. You're going to feed it to the animal. Besaria. No, it's spoiled hay. Chazal tina can use it for making of cement. This be koitzi, it has thorns. Chazal asacha can use it for fire burning material. Bimatuna, so it's moist. Well, still, chazal has a gadol. It can use it for a large fire, which is unaffected by moisture. Has a gadol ishchiach. How common is it to have a large fire? So we deem it like unuseful material, and therefore, theoretically, it can become bottled to the wall. Let's move over to the figs. Grape rice, a chazile. It's edible. Amar Shmuel b'sheh srifa was speaking that it got wormy. V'chein toni rabba bravo b'sheh srifa, it's wormy. Okay, frakti gemar, hay chavis hay chedami. Now, wasn't it sitting in a barrel? How is the barrel situated? Either pum with a bar. We're assuming that we're speaking about a earthenware, a cheres barrel, which is only mekabel tumah, only accepts tumah from within it, not from the outside. So if the opening, puma means the opening of the barrel, was facing away from that room that has the mace. So basically the back, which is immune to Kabbalah's tumah, is facing the tumah, higufa teichutz. So then the barrel itself, placed in this type of position, has the ability to repel tumah on its own. Forget about the content, the barrel itself can do so. To a klicheres, ain't a metami migavet. Because a klicheres is not susceptible to the tumah from behind, from its back. Elo de pumel gav, apparently we're speaking that the mouth is facing inward, meaning facing the tumah. So it's open to the tumah, and therefore it doesn't have the ability to repel the tumah on its own, if not for its content, as we explained. Viba Yisema, another option could be Lo'ilam Dupum Labar. Certainly we're speaking that the mouth, the opening is facing away from the tumah, but still it won't help you. Hachav my skin, we're speaking B'chavish HaMateches, we're speaking about a metal container, which is susceptible to tumah on all sides, front or back. So we have to discount the container, which cannot repel tumah. Rather, we're hinging on the content to keep the tumah at bay. Fine, let's summarize today's daf. We discussed harchakas nezakin regarding a laundry pit, different types of pits, three tefach, four amis, depending on how serious the concern is, how far-reaching its effect is. We had a question of whether distance and sub-basid is required or one or the other. Well, the safe of the mission of one or the other is okay. The ratio, we're not sure. We compare the lists of hevel generating items mentioned in Bava Basra to the list mentioned in Shabbos, and we try to reconcile the discrepancies. We discussed the chiddush of the Amas Hamayim versus the Nevrachas HaKaifsin. Each one has an element not found in the other. Each one has a chiddush. Zroim, Machresha, Mayim, all are to be kept away from these structures, Meraglaim as well. And we moved on to Tumah, things which are chaitzis, Bnei HaTumah. It has to be something which is not makabel tumah, and something which is incorporated into that structure. All the best to you, and Hatzlacha Rabbah.